Broadcasting and streaming worldwide from the Golf Club Studios, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
It's an awesome day. It's in paradise. Of course, we're going to have a mostly sunny day today with isolated showers in the morning, scattered showers this afternoon. The high between 79 and 84, depending on where you're playing. And the winds are out of the east, about 15 miles an hour. Higher gusts are possible. Got a great show for you today. Brandel Chambly, PGA Tour Golf Channel Golf Analyst, is going to be with us. But first, we have to thank the people who make this show possible, including Sony Open in Hawaii. Make Hawaii Charities the big winner of the Sony Open. Show aloha to your favorite charity at friendsofhawaii.org, and your gift gets a boost from the Aloha for Hawaii Charities Fund. This is from now through January 18th. Boost and bless our local charities and these people.
The Golf Club, brought to you by Creative Plumbing. Whether a high-rise, a shopping center, or store, townhouse, custom, or single-family home, call Creative Plumbing. Your plumbing has got to be done right. Call Creative Plumbing, 841-2837. Poipu Bay Golf Course, 18 championship holes, hosted PGA of America Grand Slam of Golf for over 10 years. An outstanding golf course for golfers of all abilities. The Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore Gem. Also, Star Protection. For property threat and risk assessment, protection for your home or business, for your concert or special event, like the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. Get the Star Team on your property. Star Protection is what you need in Hawaii and California. Acura of Honolulu, where military appreciation never ends. Ask TJ about the military appreciation pricing and discount at 777 Ala Moana Boulevard. It's a great day to test drive an Acura of Honolulu. And Alert Alarm of Hawaii, providing closed-circuit television surveillance systems for both commercial and residential customers across Hawaii. Systems that can be monitored anywhere in the world on your laptop or smartphone. Alert Alarm of Hawaii, your Kama'aina video surveillance company.
Brandel Chambly, PGA Tour Golf Channel analyst. He turned pro in 1985. He attended the University of Texas All-American. Brandel was, well, he has one PGA Tour victory. He shared a first-round lead at the Masters in 1999, and for six straight years, he was among the top 100 on the PGA Tour money list. He lost his tour card in 2003, and since then, he's worked as an analyst for Golf Channel. He's been there. He's done that. He's been on the course. He understands competition. He understands the stress of it. Welcome to the show, Brandel Chambly.
Ah, pleasure for me to join you there. And I must say that I'm a little jealous of your locale. I love Hawaii. I miss it. I'm looking forward to getting back there for the Tournament of Champions in just a few weeks.
In just a few weeks. It's the Hyundai Tournament of Champions, and we're really excited. It's going to be a great field this year. I got to ask you before I talk to you about swing analysis and some of the things that may be coming up. I need to talk to you about something I've learned about. What convinced you that it was time to end your career as a professional golfer? So many guys just keep trying and keep trying. You just stopped and went right into the second part of your life career.
Well, there were a couple things that factored into it, but mostly it was family and just wanting to be home. And I loved golf, don't get me wrong. I loved it, and I still eat, breathe, and sleep it. But just being gone almost every single week of every year and then coming home and never being able to turn it off, there really was no off-season then. There's no off-season now. And it may look like I work a lot when I'm on television, but I'm really off about half the year or even more. And when I'm off, I'm home. I have three kids, and I'm busy with them, and I was busy with them then. But I just hated being on the road all of the time.
Excellent reason. I can't think of a better one. You know, when it comes to swing analysis, you are able to drill down and find the weaknesses. And my question to you next was, have you thought of being a swing coach or coaching in general?
I have great respect for people who are able to find the root of a problem and then in a very short manner of time, correct that. Butch Harmon is really just a genius when I look at what he's done. And there are a number of great teachers out there, but I have no experience of teaching. I have a lot of experience in looking at golf swings, figuring out what the commonalities are, the best players, and enjoying them. I have a passion for that. I always have. But it is another thing altogether to teach. And having never done it, I have a great respect for it. But no, I have no plans. So I am writing a book right now, which will be out next year, about the commonalities of the greatest players of all time. And it's a fascinating journey for me. I mean, I'm not writing the book so much to give my opinion as to discover my opinion. And in the process of writing this book, it's been enlightening.
I bet it has. And you know, when I listen to you, I'm like, yeah, right. Absolutely. And then one day I remember watching, and I do watch a lot of Golf Channel. You were sitting next to Frank Nobilo, who's been on the show. And I see him over at the Hyundai Tournament of Champions, you know, getting coffee in the morning. And you guys got into quite a heated discussion. He didn't quite agree with your analysis. And I was watching. It was fascinating to see you two debate.
Well, he and I have been at it for about, 10 years in television. And when I played the tour for a living, he was one of my favorite people to play golf with. He and Colin Montgomery, actually. And it's funny, I work with both of them now because I enjoyed their thoughts. But Frank and I are really like an old married couple. We argue all the time. But we have tremendous respect for each other. I know that Frank's whatever side he's going to argue is going to be well thought out. It's going to be passionate. And it's going to make sense to me. And a lot of the times I sit there and he starts talking, I think, I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yes.
And he enlightened me. But in this particular instance, he was very passionate about one side of the argument. I was very passionate about the other side. And it was 10 minutes of television, and it was fun.
It was.
You know, a lot of people thought that, we were going to go to blows. But, we had drinks later on that week. So I was arguing about specifically. About Tiger's golf swing and the damage it was doing to his body. And Frank's point was that his body was causing the poor golf swing. So we were arguing two sides of an issue. Obviously, I thought I was right, and he thinks he's right.
But it was almost the same thing in a way, because I think his swing did hurt his body, because the torque on the spine and those delicate... in between every one of our bones, there's the juice that keeps it all together,
right.
And you're just, that torque is always squeezing it out, this synovial fluid, and that in that damage, that changes your swing. So I'm like, okay, it was just interesting seeing those you two talk about that. And I was really lucky. Every 2 years we have here in Hawaii, the Aloha Section puts together a biennial conference. And we have the pleasure of getting speakers come to the conference that probably Susie Whaley was here.
Yeah.
And Gary McCord was here. And Gary had discovered something that he said would revolutionize teaching. Now, somebody just a few minutes ago, so I am absolutely walking into this completely blind. He said, you have to ask Brandel about Tathara golf. And I'm like, uh-oh, what's that?
well, it is, and it is a very, it is a wonderful way to talk about golf. In a different way. If you're one of those people who's a little more open minded, the actual motion of the golf swing is similar to so many other motions in sport. It's not unique to golf. And there is a man by the name of Brian Hepler here in Scottsdale who links it to strike force mentality of Eastern philosophy. And he has created a driving range with all of these stations around it that have very much to do with yoga and various art forms of martial arts. And he just links the whole motion from the backswing, from the setup to the backswing to the downswing to impact as martial arts, so to speak. But he links it with all these great players of all time. And he makes wonderful arguments, and I agree with when I walked into a studio, I was like, this is exactly what I've been thinking and saying and talking about forever, and you've done great research on it, and you're doing it in a different way. And it's just the program's just getting put together, and actually it'll be out this year. And it'll create quite a buzz in the game of golf. It will.
I went to the website, which is, of course, is under construction, and it says you have to scroll all the way down. It's tathata.com, and it says, we're building something special here. Stay tuned for all the new tathata.com, for the all-new tathata.com. For more information, and tathatagolf.com, I keep going there, and it swings me back to this page. So everything is under construction, and I'm looking forward to finding out more because, you know, Hawaii and many places have the Eastern roots, and they're very comfortable with the martial arts, which are they're not fighting forms. They're exercise. They're Zen. They're meditative. They're, right?
Yeah. So you know, I'll give you just one example. So in the last 10 years. Well, it's been going on for much longer than that. But in the last 10 years, the game has come to a fevered pitch on the topics of lag and forward shuffling. And this was a little bit of what Frank and I were arguing about. And I couldn't disagree with this more vehemently. You don't force lag. It happens as a natural consequence of proper movement. But if you try to, if you get all these great athletes and you tell them lag is important, and it becomes a central theme of their golf swing. Well, they're good enough and they work at it long enough that they can carry that angle deep into the downswing and get their hands well in front of the golf ball and create what everybody calls lag. To me, it's just a very inefficient way to hit a golf ball. In particular, when you get to longer clubs with less loft, you lose the ability to get the ball in the air and to flight it the way you would want, and your closure rate is just awful, and then you have to lean back and it hurts your back. Well, tathata golf is a method, and literally it's based on the commonalities of the greatest players and martial arts going all the way back, where it just explains that lag just happens as a natural consequence of moving your body properly. And actually, to get lag, you almost feel like you are throwing the club at the golf ball. You almost feel like you are. As you move your weight to your left side, which was consistent with what Jack Nicklaus said when he wrote about driving the golf ball, that he felt like he threw the club head at the golf ball. Ben Hogan had similar comments. Greg Norman had similar comments. So none of these players tried to create lag. It would have been a death penalty. It would have been the death sentence to their golf swing. I mean, they would have been awful. You'd have never heard of these guys if they would have been trying to create lag. They transfer their weight, and literally they feel like they throw the club head at the golf ball. In the process of transferring your weight properly, you create a lot of lag, but you don't think about it.
That's a true extension of your arm, your hand, to the ball. I mean, when you talk about throwing your club head at the ball, it's like extending everything down as you would. Then it becomes a natural feel. I like that.
Yeah. Now, most amateurs, if you tell them to throw the club at the ball, of course, they haven't transferred their weight off their right side if they're a right-handed golfer. And so, obviously, they're going to get the club outside the line on the way down, and they're not going to do anything. But, I mean, first and foremost, is you know, it goes in sequence. But if you've made a proper backswing and you transfer your weight, if there's a lateral slide of your weight, your hip, and your left side, into your left side, you know, you almost can't release the club too quickly. I mean, it's impossible for somebody to release the club where their hands would be behind the ball at impact. And that's how important weight shift is. And so at odds, not only with lag, but at odds with the belief that you should set up with your weight centered to the left or stacked on the left side and keep it there, which is not at all consistent with any martial arts move in the history of martial arts or any of the commonalities of the great players. But again, it's gotten a bit of a foothold on the in some levels on the tour, to the detriment of those players too, by the way.
I think it's interesting that some people just are able to swing a club and it's a natural feeling for them. Even though it's not natural, it's somehow, if we think too much about doing all these things, it's impossible to actually play and enjoy the game.
It is, and you don't need to think about it. You really don't. I mean, all this information that people are digging up is great for them because they can carry on a debate and nobody really knows what they're talking about. to the average golfer, it's not important. Not important at all. They don't need to know that. They don't need to hear it. You know, you need to be taught how to grip the club. You need to be taught how to line up and address the golf ball. And then a few other things after that. You know, I mean, you know, in general, you have to be able to transfer your weight to your back foot and make a pivot, and then transfer your weight to your forward foot and make a pivot. And if you've got a good grip and a good stance, you know, you're off and running. You've done everything you need to do to go enjoy the game for the rest of your life. And it doesn't need to be much more complicated than that for the average player.
Excellent. I need to take care of our sponsors who allow me to talk with you for another 14 minutes. So we're going to continue with Brendel Chamblee, PGA Tour and Golf Channel analyst, right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Kapalua Maui. It's where champions come to play. In this winners-only field, the Hyundai Tournament of Champions features the best of the best on the PGA Tour. See Zach Johnson, Bubba Watson, Matt Kuchar, Hunter Mahan, and 2014 FedEx Cup champion Billy Horschel play in paradise January 8th through 12th at the Plantation Course. To purchase tickets starting at $20, visit pgatour.com/Hyundai.
We're busier than ever, and some things can just wait. Washing the car, painting the study, or cleaning the screens.
Your plumbing can't wait.
It doesn't matter if your restaurant's water line broke at 10 a.m. or your building's hot water heater blew up at midnight.
Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii.
Big business or high-rise, retail store, or home. You need your job done now, done right. Your 50-foot sewer pipe won't fix itself. That's Creative Plumbing!
841-2837.
Your experts on call.
The beaten path is not for everyone. That's why the Acura MDX is designed just for you. With features like Juuli LED headlights that mimic natural sunlight, illuminating more of what lies ahead. Integrated dynamic system with three separate performance settings to meet your mood. One-touch walk-in for simple one-button access in and out of the third row. And available Acura Link surface street traffic information to keep you one step ahead of the herd. The Acura MDX. Maybe it's called the beaten path because it can be beaten. 3-year traffic subscription included. See your Acura dealer for system and coverage details.
Be sure to come visit your Hawaii Acura dealers and check out their latest models, cutting-edge features, and amazing deals. Visit your Hawaii Acura dealers today.
Star Protection Agency, providing security across Hawaii since 1991. Licensed and bonded, property guard and patrol services, loss prevention. Star Protection provides the security you need with the industry-leading internet-based reporting system. One call does it all. 532-3911 or on the web at starprotectionagency.com. Star Protection, locally owned with people you trust.
Work the ball, play more break, be aggressive. Wow! 6 feet past the cup. What was I thinking? Now, back to Danielle Tucker on The Golf Club.
And welcome back. You know, if you're looking for a gift, gift hunting at Poipu Bay Golf Course is a really good idea. They have a table with Adidas, Link Soul, Ashworth, ahead, 40% off. Brendel Chamblee is joining us this morning, PGA Tour and Golf Channel analyst. And we're talking about the swing, of course, because that's what he does so well. But I want to talk to you. I put it out on Twitter, a question. I said, is there a question you'd like me to ask Brendel? And one of them was, and I thought it was interesting because I think of the prototype professionals. There's so many people who are almost looking like the same body. They say it's the perfect golf body. The prototype professional golfer becomes more athletic. As this happens, will that accelerate a trend of younger winners? That was the question. So I was talking with a physio yesterday who asked me if being in the gym is critical in today's game to get to the trophy stand. You know, and I was wondering, Brendel, when there's so many guys who are in the gym, but then there's Brad Fritch Fritz, I think. I can't remember how to pronounce his name correctly. He just is medaled at the web.com, you know, medalist there, way under par. And he's much heavier. He's like a Craig Stadler kind of form.
Right?
What gives?
Yes. And then there's Bubba Watson, who probably has never been in a gym in his life, and his forearms are about as big around as a number two pencil. And he's the longest hitter on the PGA Tour. And he's the longest hitter on the PGA Tour and really one of the best ball strikers on the PGA Tour, much overlooked talent in that regard, without ever having a lesson, without ever going to the gym. So, you know, the question is, does the gym make a better golfer? You know, I don't know. I look at all these videos online, and I look at these kids, and I play a lot of golf with these young kids that can swing a 6-iron up to 110 miles an hour. I mean, a 6-iron, I see it.
Wow.
But, you know, I don't see that translating to better golf. If you look and go back, let's just go back to the year 2000. So in the last 14 years, the scoring average haven't moved one-tenth of one stroke, not even, all the way through the scoring average. It's down to 125th man. So, you know, it's not having an appreciable effect on the scoring averages at this point.
Go ahead.
But I was just going to say that the average age of a tour winner from 2003 to 2007 was 35 years old. And the average age of a major winner going back to all the way back to 1960 is 32 years old. So, you know, the trends are not necessary. There's an outlier here or there. There's a Vijay Singh occasionally, and there's a Jordan Spieth occasionally. But by and large, the age with which a golfer finds his prime is 26 to 35. And now, in the last 20 years, what has happened, though, the top 100 golfers, the average age has come down from 35 to 32 years. And in 1994, there were only two players under the age of 25 in the top 100 in the world. And now then there's 10. And there's three of them in the top 10. That's, you know, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, and Jordan Spieth. So, you know, the game, I think guys are getting a better technique. I don't know that fitness is playing a huge part in that, but maybe it's playing a little part in it. But still, I think experience matters as much as it ever has in this game. But yes, the average age is getting a little bit younger on the PGA Tour.
So it's interesting, I thought, when you said the scoring average hasn't changed. We see 63s and 65s and 66s. They seem to be just coming so low. But I guess by the same token, then they're like Rory McIlroy will shoot a 63 and then a 72, which,
you know,
blows my mind.
I think when we, you know, we all are guilty of it. You know, we bestow originality on whatever's present, whatever most recently happened. We do that, and I hear all the time that Rory McIlroy, you know, for Tiger to come back because the players are so much better than they were 15 years ago. Well, Rory McIlroy's scoring average last year, 2014, he won two majors, was 69.27. When Tiger, and that's his actual scoring average, not the adjusted, to me, it's a little silly, but the actual scoring average. Tiger's actual scoring average in 2000 was 68.17, more than a shot around better than Rory was last year. And for that period of time, 2005 to 2009, he was about a half a shot better than Rory was last year. So when people tell me that, you know, Rory, you know, for Tiger to come back, play the way he used to, he wouldn't intimidate these players, I giggle. If Tiger came back and played the way he used to, he would kick Rory's rear. He would beat everybody. You know, Rory is not as good as Tiger. Now, Rory's, you know, the average player, the great player, has not improved up to Tiger's level. So the gap between Rory's better than anybody else playing right now, but is he as good as Tiger Woods was? Not even close. Not even close. You know, I mean, you know, Jack Nicklaus, relative to his peers, was, you know, maybe better than Tiger. But of the current crop, no, none of these players are close to what Tiger was, and certainly not Rory.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I watch, although I, you know, I marvel at more Rory's ability when it's on and Jordan Spieth's ability when it's on. Tiger didn't have the 6 months off and then have the 6 months. He was always on.
Always. Never missed a cut. Yeah. Four majors in a row. Win by 15, win by 8. Always. He won 34% of his events from 2005 to 2009. So, you know, when I talk about Tiger Woods, people think, you know, I get people who think I hate Tiger Woods because I speak so critically of his golf swing. I'm only speaking critically of his golf swing because I cannot believe somebody who had a golf swing that could decimate his competition by 15 shots, win four majors in a row, 142 cuts in a row, do things nobody's ever thought of in the game of golf, would willfully dismantle that. It's beyond me. So I'm pulling for Tiger to come back and play the type of golf that he did in the past because I want to watch it selfishly.
Yes.
I want to see him do it again.
Yes.
You know, and if that means he came back and he was any semblance of the golfer he was from 2005 to 2009, and Rory was playing his best golf, then we would have what we never had with him and Phil Mickelson. We never had them going blow for blow in a major championship. Or, for that matter, you know, I mean, Tiger never finished runner-up to Phil, Vijay, Ernie, Padraig Harry. He never finished runner-up to any of them in a major. And, you know, I'd like to see them paired together in the final group going blow for blow. We don't get to stage those things like other sports, but the possibility's there if Tiger comes back.
It'll be interesting. I have to ask you, Adam Scott, when asked about the 2016 Olympics, said he thought it should be for amateurs and no professionals. What are your thoughts?
Well, long ago, the Olympics lost me. I mean, I still watch it, but, you know, it's just an extension of professional sports. So, you know, I think it's captivating. But, you know, when I grew up, you know, it was ostensibly an amateur event. Now, I think that got muddled with what constituted an amateur in some Eastern Bloc countries. And all of a sudden, it was like, wait a minute, you guys are essentially sending professionals because they're doing nothing but training all the time. And so the next thing you know, it's a professional competition. As it relates to golf, we already have the major championships. And they tell us, and we have world rankings that tell us who the best golfers in the world are. We know who the best golfers are in the world. And as it relates to the way the teams are going to be chosen, you could be 10th in the world in the United States and not make the team. You could be 15th in the world and not make the team. There could be 10 players from the United States in the top 50 and not make the team. So is it going to be the best players in the world? It'll be some of them. So, you know, the Ryder Cup, I mean, the Olympics, when you get there, it's just going to be what it is. It's going to be a competition with a different theme and a different trophy. And because you're playing for your country as an individual as opposed to a Ryder Cup, it will have that sort of appeal. So trust me, when Adam Scott gets there and he'll be there, you'll probably have a different opinion about it.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it's not going to tell us who the best golfer in the world is.
Yeah.
It's just we're going to get to see the best golfers in the world or some of the best golfers in the world compete as an individual for their country. And that pressure will be unique to golf.
But it's
not going to tell us who the best golfer is.
Yeah, just the we call it chicken skin in Hawaii, just the goosebumps that I get thinking about playing for my country would be enough to knock me off the first tee. You know, I'd be like, ah.
Right. Right. In the Ryder Cup, you do it, but you do it with 11 other players. This is just going to be you playing for your country. So, you know, on the last day, you know, the last few holes, we'll never, you know, if Tiger makes it, Tiger's done everything in golf, but he's never played for himself, as far as I know. The World Cup is he and another partner, so this will be just for himself, for his country. And I think, you know, that'll be compelling TV, but it's not going to tell us who the best player in the world is, not by any stretch of the imagination.
On the Ryder Cup and the Ryder Cup Task Force,
mm-hmm.
Got together for 4 hours, I understand. Freddie Couples there's lots of talk about whether he was contacted, whether they're thinking about him as captain. What's your take on all this?
Well, I know that Freddie was in the Phoenix area doing an outing. And, you know, Freddie's Freddie. You know, he shows his hand all the time. And just offhandedly, he said that he was the Ryder Cup captain. And then he started backpedaling because there were 50 riders there, and you know he said I've been this, and I've been the Ryder Cup captain, and everybody's like, hold on, say what? and then he backed up to say that he'd been contacted by them. So, you know, I've had conversations with some of the guys who are going to make those decisions, and it blows my mind that they would choose Freddie Couples to be the Ryder Cup captain. But that's if I were a betting man, I'd say that's as sure as bet as you can get in the game of golf. And I was led to believe a few years ago that Larry Nelson was going to be the captain for this go around. And you know, long overdue, much deserved. Just a horrible oversight in the game of golf. Just as egregious an oversight as there is in the game of golf, but he hasn't been named captain. And you know, people will say, well, because he's out of touch. Look what happened with Tom Watson. And I laugh. I'm like, really? How did all those in-touch captains do for the last 15 years? How have they done? They've gotten obliterated, some of them by the widest margin of loss in the history of the Ryder Cup. So, you know, my bet is when they get to Minnesota, Fred Couples will be the captain.
Interesting. Always, I'm such a pleasure talking with you, meeting you. Brandel Chamblee, PGA Tour and Golf Channel. What is the name of your book that you're writing right now? Do you have a name yet?
Well, I haven't decided on a title yet, but essentially the theme of it is the commonality of the greatest players of all time. It'll be out within the next 6 months or so, probably.
Excellent.
But I look forward to seeing Hawaii in
yes.
a couple of weeks. I look forward to meeting you.
Oh, that would be great.
You again there.
Yes.
And thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Pleasure talking with you. I'll be following Tathata Golf, tathata.com, and looking for your book and looking for you at the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. Thanks for being
Thanks
on the
so
show.
Much.
Aloha.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays, too. We'll be back right after this. We're going to talk about the state of the game with Steve Mona. He's the CEO of the World Golf Foundation. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
The big hitters of the PGA Tour hit Wailea for the Sony Open January 12th through the 18th. Come kick off the 2015 tour season with Jimmy Walker, Chris Kirk, Matt Kuchar, Dave Love III, and more. Big names, big action. Tickets at www.sonyopeninhawaii.com or at First Hawaiian Bank on Oahu. Military free with valid ID. Admissions and bag policy apply. Visit www.sonyopeninhawaii.com.
Alert Alarm of Hawaii provides CCT surveillance systems for both commercial and residential customers across Hawaii. These systems can be monitored via the internet from anywhere in the world on your laptop or smartphone. We can also monitor your video systems for you from our 24-hour local 5-Diamond Alarm Monitoring Center. Call Alert Alarm at 528-6407 for a free security evaluation and estimate. Alert Alarm of Hawaii, your Kama'aina video surveillance company. Security solutions for your peace of mind.
Hoipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Poipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay. Teed up the ball, feet grounded, taking a deep breath, rip it, and rip it. Did I hear that? Oh, man. Now back to Danielle Tucker.
If I only had those three swing thoughts, I might get away with playing this game, but I don't. I have not been able to release my mind and allow my body. Steve Mona, CEO, World Golf Foundation. We like to call him the most powerful man in golf because his board of directors is the PGA Tour Commissioner, the RNA, Peter Dawson. I guess that's going to change soon. European Tour, George O'Grady, USGA's Mike Davis, PGA of America CEO Pete Pavakwa, Executive Director Augusta National Will Jones, LPGA Commissioner Michael Wan, and now we're talking with Steve Mona. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Danielle. It's always great to be with you.
I wanted to know an update. In 2011, the charitable impact made by golf, as calculated by the World Golf Foundation, was $3.9 billion. Have you adjusted that figure for the last, to make 3 years?
We haven't, Danielle. We do that study once every 5 years, and so that's when we'll have a new number. My sense is it's probably moved up some. It's hard to say exactly. Because we don't measure it on an annual basis. But it's fair to say, and what I say often is that golf generates nearly $4 billion a year in charitable giving, and that is more than the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NBA combined. So it's quite an impressive figure.
It certainly is. The World Golf Foundation mission is to develop and support initiatives that positively impact lives through the game of golf and its traditional values, if you're not familiar with the World Golf Foundation. And I tweeted out this morning, golf, powerful good for people and the environment. The game is growing. Talking with Steve Mona. And somebody said, finally, good news. So when I was looking at, I mean, the World Golf Foundation has done Golf 2020. You're responsible for the first tee program. So much good for the game. Golf and the environment has often, golf's taken a hit, but huge strides have been made. The Golf Course Superintendent Association of America is amazing how they're working to be stewards of the land. Can you tell us a little bit about how golf is now treating the environment?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I think it's important to keep in mind that golf course superintendents are trained professionals who manage a golf course in an environmentally sustainable manner. And if you site, design, construct, and maintain a golf course in that manner, then you will have an environmentally sustainable piece of property that in a lot of cases is better for the environment, or at least as good as the environment, as it was in a natural state. And in a lot of cases is probably the most responsibly managed piece of land in any kind of urban center. So we have to do a much better job, Danielle, of telling that story, because golf courses really, if properly maintained and managed, can actually enhance the environment. And these are professionally trained people that are caring for it.
Exactly. Exactly. And they, I found that golf superintendents, they love, the reason they're in the business is not to make money. They're not, you know, making huge sums of money like one might think. They're in the game because they love the land and they work it. And they're, I was thinking about sustainability and thinking about how a golf course becomes a place where the water runoff ends up, like Coral Creek Golf Course here on Oahu is just one course that comes to mind. So how are you, the World Golf Foundation, supporting these initiatives?
Well, first of all, we've declared that sustainability is one of the most important issues confronting the game, and that we as an industry need to support all efforts to ensure that golf facilities are sustainable, both economically but also environmentally. So that's number one. So we've declared it as one of the major strategies of the golf industry. Number two, we are, through our various communication vehicles, making citizens but also practitioners aware of best management practices that are being used at facilities all over the country that they might be able to adopt and emulate themselves. There's a lot of innovative practices that are going on. The biggest issue is making sure that everybody's aware of what those practices are. And then finally, there are a number of environmental programs that have been promulgated over the last several years by various environmental organizations. And we're also making sure that golf course superintendents and course owners are aware that these programs exist, because they can be adopted and adapted to individual facilities, which ultimately will lead to a more environmentally sustainable management of that facility.
And, you know, for people who say sustainability, define that for us.
Well, basically all sustainability means is it's the ability for the golf course, in this case, to continue as a property that will provide the access to golfers themselves. So when you talk about sustainability, what you mean is that you have environmental practices that allow the golf course to continue to flourish so that people can play it for generations to come. And the reason that the economic sustainability and the environmental sustainability go hand in hand is if you don't maintain a golf course in an environmentally sustainable manner, you probably won't be able to maintain it in an economically sustainable manner. And then you won't have a golf course that can be played, because the pricing will get to a point where most people won't be able to pay the fee to play the course.
Exactly. The cost of water to keep a course verdant green, which isn't natural to begin with, is prohibitive. It also takes away from the rest of the community that needs the water. I like the way it's phrased here. The turf grass on golf courses serves as a filter to runoff to control the flooding. Out-of-play areas offer wildlife habitat. The trees and the bushes filter dust and pollen, and the green space has a cooling effect on surrounding properties. And when you put it like that, as you did at your website, World Golf Foundation, it really gives people a sense of, you know, this is a parkland. And a parkland doesn't have to be watered all the time, although in Hawaii we do have the problem of visitors coming or tourists coming. They expect it to be green here year-round, regardless of whether they're on the North Shore or, you know, the leeward side where it's usually dry. So that's one of the problems we have in controlling water use.
Well, I'll tell you, Danielle, that's a problem that most parts of the country have, from the, not so much that, but from the standpoint of the perception of what a golf course ought to look like. And we in the industry, again, need to do a better job of educating golfers about what good playable conditions look like, because it may not necessarily mean wall-to-wall green. And the best example of that this past year, as we go back and think about it, was the back-to-back U.S. Opens, the men's and women's opens at Pinehurst. That golf course didn't look like the normal U.S. Open course, and yet it played beautifully. And the USGA was very happy with how it played. The players themselves were very happy with it. And my view is, in certain parts of the country, maybe not all of them, but in certain parts, that's going to be the way golf looks in years to come. And so the issue there is we just need to recalibrate a bit our expectations of what a golf course should look like.
Exactly. And a lot of people go to Ireland or to Scotland for the old courses, not some of the newer ones that are being built to satisfy the new, you know, this the last 30 years has changed the way we view what a golf course should look like. You know, maybe watching the Masters on television changed the way people look at the way a golf course should look like. And we go over to Scotland, we go over to the UK to play the old courses, and that's just the way the ground is. You know, and St. Andrews is a park. They happen to play golf on that park. And they don't go and water it a bunch. Maybe for the Open they water it a bunch. but I digress. The World Golf Foundation CEO, Steve Mona, is our guest. World Golf Foundation is responsible for things like the First Tee, Golf 2020. Not only that, but the other initiatives to grow the game. You're a part of Get Golf Ready, Girls Golf, all of those things. Am I correct?
That's correct. We have, this past year, worked very closely with the five U.S.-based organizations that make up our board, which specifically are the LPGA, the Masters Tournament, the PGA of America, the PGA Tour, and the USGA. And the result of that year's worth of work is a very focused and deliberate focus, if you will, on a certain number of initiatives, which include drive, chip, and putt, PGA Junior League Golf, LPGA USGA Girls Golf, the First Tee, Get Golf Ready, and sustainability. So we as an industry are focused squarely on those initiatives, and we believe those give us the best chance to enhance greater participation in the game. And so that's why we're focused in those areas.
Huge drive, chip, putt. Everybody was like, I wonder if this is going to work. Extremely successful. Kids really put on a show, if you will, and had a wonderful time.
Absolutely. And drive, chip, and putt, for those that aren't aware, is an initiative that was created by the Masters Tournament, the USGA, and the PGA of America. And it's really golf's answer to pass, punt, and kick, if people remember that, that the NFL in part sponsors. In any event, what occurs is you qualify locally, and then if you're fortunate enough to get through the local qualifying, you have a regional qualifier, and then from there you go to the national final, which is held the Sunday prior to the Masters at Augusta National.
It's where fabulous.
80 very fortunate young people get to compete. And so it's been tremendously successful. I'll just give you an idea. All 50 states had qualifiers this past year. There were 256 qualifiers that occurred after the local qualifying. So just tremendously successful. We think it's going to be great for the game to help draw greater interest and greater participation among juniors.
Yes. You know, the junior programs seem to be doing so well. And then kids go from juniors and hopefully the high school golf, you know, and then that's also junior golf, Danielle. And then they go into collegiate. They might get a scholarship. Then the question is, do they continue golf? And I go to that because how is the sustainability of our numbers in golf? Are we growing numbers? Are we still steady numbers? Are we shrinking in numbers in the United States?
We're basically stable, Danielle. We've been at about 25 million participants in the U.S. That we've been on either side of that over the last few years, but that's basically our base now. And from a rounds played perspective, we've been pretty steady there as well. So our view is that we've stabilized our base, if you will, and now the challenge is really twofold. It's to get people who are playing the game now to play a little bit more. Moving people from, say, core golfers to avid golfers or occasional golfers to core golfers. And then secondly, it's really not so much an interest and trial issue. People are interested in the game and people try it, but it's a retention issue. So what we need to do is ensure that people have a good experience with golf, they, one, and then two, that they feel that they're getting better and that they're at least playing well enough to enjoy the game, and then that will lead to better retention. So that's really where the challenge is for us.
Yes. Yes, I understand. We have an EWGA chapter now. We're a year old, yay, a little over that, and trying to grow women participation, get more women to enjoy it, give women an opportunity to find a path to golf. You know, you can be in an office and you can hear about a charity event and you'll say to yourself, I'd kind of like to do that, but I don't know how to play the game, you know, or I'm embarrassed. I'm not really good at the game, and all these people must be good. And it's funniest thing is when you finally go to a charity event, because maybe you've tried to hone your skills, you'll discover that everybody who's playing is not really very good. They're just there to have fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's what I would say for your female listeners. Try Get Golf Ready. Because I will tell you this, Get Golf Ready, on an annual basis, 60% of those who graduate from Get Golf Ready programs are women. And that's three times what the number is in terms of overall participation, which is 20%. So it works. And what we also know further is that 80% of the people who graduate from a Get Golf Ready program are still playing golf a year later. And then 5 years later, that number declines, but only to 60%. So it has a tremendous retention rate. It's better than any player development program that we're aware of, and it's very woman-friendly. So that's where I would send people who are interested in taking up the game.
Excellent. Good advice, because we had a group of women who did get golf ready over at Ko'olina and had a very good time. So some courses like Ko'olina, Turtle Bay, on Oahu have the Get Golf Ready program. But numbers around the world are growing. Golf is actually growing. It's always been popular in Japan, but I didn't expect Vietnam to be on your list of where the golf is growing.
Well, it is, and you're right. If you look at golf globally, it's actually growing. So whereas in the United States it's been slightly down, now stable, in other parts of the world it's actually up. And so if you look at golf globally, there are more than 30,000 golf facilities now across the world. A little bit less than half of those are in the United States. And then there are in the neighborhood of about 57 to 60 million, more like 60 million now, people who play the game worldwide, and 25 or so are in the U.S. So we've really been thrilled, really, with the growth of golf globally. And we think we're going to see more of it, particularly when golf becomes part of the Olympic Games starting in 2016. We think that's going to help to create greater interest in the game, particularly in nations where it hasn't really been part of the culture previously. We think that these great athletes playing the game will inspire younger people to be interested in it, and that will lead to growth in countries that really hadn't considered golf as part of their culture previously.
Yeah, maybe and then in those countries, maybe they'll kick in some funds to create a couple of golf courses where there may not be one, which I was looking at Jack Nicklaus's list of projects where, you know, they haven't started yet, but they're in the planning stages. And he's got courses around the world in places that I would not have thought. You know, Croatia, for instance, the game is growing in Croatia. That, to me, it's pretty amazing. We're talking with Steve Mona. He's the CEO of the World Golf Foundation, responsible for Golf 2020, the First Tee, and other industry initiatives we've been talking about, and also the World Golf Hall of Fame, in case you didn't know. There wasn't an induction last year because of changes made to the way the selection process is done. But this year, for the presentation in 2015, there is a World Golf Hall of Fame class. Is everyone pleased with the changes and how it's worked out?
Yeah, we're delighted, Danielle, with the changes to the whole selection process. And without getting too lost in the details, it led to what we consider to be a tremendous class in 2015. And that class consists of Mark O'Meara, David Graham, Laura Davies, and the deceased golf course architect, A.W. Tillinghast. And they will be inducted on Monday of Open Championship Week at the home of golf, St. Andrews, Scotland. And we just think it's going to be a tremendous start to that week. And that is part of a new strategy of ours to move the induction ceremony around the world. So we'll be at St. Andrews in 15. We'll be back at the World Golf Village in 17 on the Monday of Players Championship. And then in 2019, we'll be in Pebble Beach the Monday of the U.S. Open to induct that class.
And I like that.
Yeah, we think it's a great rota.
Yeah. I like that idea of always moving. It makes it fresh and exciting. And do you think we'll get more of our past inductees to be present? Are you twisting some arms?
Well, first of all, that has been, as you know, an issue in previous years that the past inductees haven't necessarily come back to the induction in the way we would like to see, certainly. And so two things. One, we've involved more of our Hall of Famers in the selection process. We had four Hall of Famers on the selection subcommittee. We had four Hall of Famers actually chaired the selection commission, and those included Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, Annika Sorenstam, and Nancy Lopez. And we have said if you're going to participate in the selection process, we very much would like to see you attend the induction ceremony itself. So I think you'll see more through that. And then secondly, I think you'll see more generally because, for instance, at St. Andrews this year, the RNA is inviting back all their past Open champions. And a number of those men are members of the World Golf Hall of Fame. So we believe that we'll pick up some attendance off of that. So we're working much more closely with our board organizations to help drive greater attendance at the induction ceremony.
Fantastic. That's really good news, because it also drives the television audience. You know, people just get more excited seeing the past greats of the game participate. I know the women usually showed up for it, and it would be good to see the men also arrive. I think I've covered everything, but I wanted to ask you one final question. In your estimation, if you don't mind, the PGA of America, after it went through its scandal, if you will, with the former leader, he did so much good. Ted Bishop did so much good, I thought, in elevating the stature of the PGA of America membership. Kind of got them at the same level as the PGA Tour, as the USGA, brought them to the table. And I was wondering what you think is that going to stay status quo? Will they stay there? Am I wrong in my evaluation? And to follow up on that is, what do you think is the best thing happening in golf right now that you can see?
Okay, well, you just raised 3 points there, so let me take them one by one.
Thanks.
First, with respect to the PGA keeping its seat at the table, there's no question the answer to that is yes. In fact, we believe, and it's certainly true at the World Golf Foundation level, that there are really seven organizations that all have a seat at the same table. So we never viewed the PGA of America as not being on the same level as those other organizations.
I understand, but they still didn't have the same clout. And I think he, with his voice, although it may have irritated some people, did make them more strong as a group. But that's my personal opinion.
So that's the first thing. So no question the PGA of America has a seat at the table, and that will continue. The second point, which is really your first point, I've known Ted a long time, and he has been a tremendous champion for the game. And if you look at Get Golf Ready, for instance, he was the first real, what I call, spokesman for Get Golf Ready that was an actual golf professional who had put Get Golf Ready in place at his facility. And so for those years, the 2 years he was secretary, the 2 years he was vice president, there was no greater advocate for Get Golf Ready than Ted Bishop. So he should be remembered for some of the good things that he did, including helping to get Golf Ready off the ground, no question about it. And then the best thing that's happening in golf right now, I would probably have to point to two things, actually. One is, and I alluded to this earlier, but the collaboration, the cooperation, and the coordination that's happening now among the major golf organizations is better than it's ever been. And so why should anyone care about that? Well, the reason is that you're going to see much greater focus, better coordination around these key initiatives that we're all trying to have take hold. And so I think that ultimately those initiatives will all be very successful in the long term. And then finally, the other piece that I would just mention is the first tee. That's one of our programs, obviously, but it's having such a tremendous impact on young people, not only introducing them to the game, which obviously is what it's about, but also teaching them life skills and healthy habits. And so the way that that we always try to frame up the first tee is it's a junior golf development program, but it's also a youth development program. And not only are we creating the next generation of golfers, we're also creating the next generation of leaders. I think that's important to consider.
It's very important. And when you see a young person who's gone through the first tee speak so eloquently as I've seen them speak, after being shy and reserved or, looking down on the ground all the time, as so many kids are, in seeing their sense of self and their sense of pride and being able to speak out and speak up, it's a beautiful thing. And I thank you, and I thank all of the people who make the first tee possible. It's wonderful. Thank you very much, Steve Mona, for being on the show, CEO of the World Golf Foundation.
My pleasure, Danielle. Good to be with you, and Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you and your listeners.
Thank you very much. To you, too. Aloha. We're going to come back and talk with John Huggan, golf writer since 1986. Indeed. But first, I want to do this. I want to thank the people who make the show possible. They are going to be on in just a second here. KPUA Hilo, KGU Honolulu, KONI Lanai City, KTOH Kalaheo.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
We're busier than ever, and some things can just wait. Washing the car, painting the study, or cleaning the screens.
Your plumbing can't wait.
It doesn't matter if your restaurant's water line broke at 10 a.m. or your building's hot water heater blew up at midnight.
Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii.
Big business or high-rise, retail store, or home. You need your job done now, done right. Your 50-foot sewer pipe won't fix itself. That's Creative Plumbing!
841-2837.
Your experts on call.
Kapalua Maui. It's where champions come to play. In this winner's only field, the Hyundai Tournament of Champions features the best of the best on the PGA Tour. See Zach Johnson, Bubba Watson, Matt Kuchar, Hunter Mahan, and 2014 FedEx Cup champion Billy Horschel play in paradise January 8th through 12th at the Plantation Course. To purchase tickets starting at $20, visit pgatour.com/Hyundai.
In the security business, trust is earned over time.
That's why Star Protection Agency has grown to be the largest locally owned security company in Hawaii. We've earned a reputation as a common sense, highly responsive, cutting edge security provider. Our clients know that we're watching out for them. We know that our fast response is what makes us a star performer.
And we'd like to thank our clients for their trust over the past 20 years.
Trust your security to the Star, Star Protection Agency.
It's the Golf Club. Visit our website at www.radiogolfclub.com. You can hear previous archived shows. Just hit the listen button and pick the show you want to hear. Email Danielle with your thoughts and requests. Contact us about advertising and check out our sponsor links. That's www.radiogolfclub.com. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club.
And welcome back. You know, I don't even pretend to be any kind of equipment guru. I have people on the show who are the equipment gurus, and I just try to ask the right questions to get them to divulge information that will help you with your game. The weakest part of my game when it comes to understanding and talking about the golf club is the shaft. And Chad Embry, the project manager at Fujikura Golf, and by the way, the Aloha Golf Center is your local Fujikura Golf outlet, and I'm sure they'd be happy to tell you more. But I wanted to talk to them about, you know, Fujikura Golf makes golf shafts. And you say, yeah. And you probably walk into a golf shop and you buy your, you get fitted. So they tell you that, you know, this needs to be this way and this, the head needs to be like this. And then we'll make these adjustments for you. And then after you've spent, you know, $1,000 or more, they say, you know, but, you know, you should really have the shaft. This different shaft would make such a big difference. And you're like, yeah, right. You're trying to upsell me. No, apparently, it's actually for your game. They're concerned, but then, you know, you've got the weight of the shaft in terms of grams. I mean, then frequency, and how is it, what is frequency? And not only does, you know, Fujikura golf shaft, you think, okay, that's one golf shaft, and it comes in different, is stiff or not. And then you go and you start looking into it, and it goes Pro Blue Speeder Fuel Kylie. Oh, it looks like, it looks almost like a Hawaiian word. Red Tie, Tour Fuel, Speeder. They even have one specialty shaft that came out for the Folds of Honor. Well, to make a long story short, Chad Embry didn't show. I'm sorry that I won't be able to tell you more, but we will eventually delve into the question of what's the best shaft for your golf club, okay? Yes, I have some golf balls that are going to be sent to you when I return from the frozen tundra that is Virginia to me. Because, yes, I'm going to go and visit my grandson for a little while. I'm leaving Hawaii this afternoon. You know, when I'm packing, I have to put on, okay, so I get to Los Angeles, I'm going to change planes, I'll put on another layer. Then when I get inside the plane, I'll have four layers for top and bottom. I have two pairs of gloves. I have two hats, one on top of the other, make sure the ears are warm. There, it's very strange packing to go to the cold when you're leaving the islands. But I will send you these golf balls that I'm sure you would like to win. And all you have to do is be the ninth caller. It's quite simple. The number is 808-296-5467. We've had two winners already of the Bridgestone Golf Fix balls. These are designed for the recreational golfer. Yes, they're going to make you a little bit longer and a little, and they have a soft feel. So you don't lose the touch on the greens and you get a little bit further. So just all you got to be is the ninth caller at 808-296-5467. I see now. What does he say, David Faraday? You know, if this ball doesn't fix your game, you can always be an announcer. You may not be a dancer, but the soft cover will mean more time on the dance floor. Such nice quips, don't you think? You're not exactly sure what golf graduational core means? Yeah, I can't even pronounce that, okay? But for you, it means longer distance. So this is for the recreational golfer in all of us, and the number is 808-296-5467. And it makes a great Christmas or holiday present for you, should you be in the market for one. Let's go to Scotland. I say, let's just all go to Scotland right now. John Huggan, golf writer since 1986. He's also the co-host of By the Minute. ByTheMinute.sport. Is it ByTheMinute.com? Find him. Google him. It's really a good show. I was listening this morning, and he's just back from Australia. He covered the Australia leg with Adam Scott was playing. I think it's so cool that Adam Scott goes on and focuses on Australia, his home. Probably enjoys being home. Welcome to the show, John.
Hello, Danielle. How are you?
Excellent. You sound fabulous. I really enjoyed listening to, I had no idea you were co-hosting a podcast.
Well, yes, it's a relatively new venture. Lawrence Donegan and myself have been doing it now for maybe a couple of months, and we have a different guest on every week. The next one up, I think, is Peter Costas. We talked to him the other day, and I think he's the next one that's going to be online.
Wow. Okay, well, some of the questions may feel familiar to you, because when I was listening, I thought, gosh, you know, I've been thinking about that, and it's interesting getting your take. So I was watching Tiger Woods. Let's talk a little bit about Tiger before we go down to Australia. And I looked at him. I went, wow, he's so humble. He's so friendly. Look at that smile. He's even smiling when he's chunking. Well, maybe he's not smiling. He looks more dumbfounded than smiling. But he's smiling after an awful round. And I thought, how approachable. Who is this Tiger Woods? What was your take on friendly Tiger Woods at the Hero World Challenge?
Well, I'll believe it next time he walks in and starts talking to the print media with that big smile on his face and actually answers questions properly, which hasn't happened in a long time in my experience. He's the master of obfuscation, which is just avoiding answering the question. If you ask him a hard question, you kind of almost become the bad guy in the room, you know. I'm not one of his favorites, I must admit. I've asked him a few hard ones in my time and never really gotten an answer. So I remain slightly cynical about the future for Tiger and the smile going ahead, shall we say.
Do you think that I think when I was listening to the podcast, you thought this might be the beginning of the downfall for Tiger, since he's not walking in with his, hey, I'm going to win this golf tournament because I come here to win. I'm only here to win. Yes.
Well, I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens over the next few months, whether this new and inverted commas swing makes a difference. But the far more interesting, as you've already mentioned, was the chipping. If that is merely just a rust problem, a technical problem that he can fix with some practice that it's not really a problem. But if it's something more than that, if it's in his head and he's got, you know, what, something even approaching the yips with that part of his game, I mean, he's basically done playing at the top level. So that, for me, that's the first question that needs to be answered is, can Tiger still chip? And if he's, if he's got a problem in that area, he's finished at the top level. I mean, Tim Clark manages to survive and make and do very well and make lots of money, and he basically can't chip at all. But he's not winning major championships, which is what Tiger's interested in. So if Tiger wants to win majors and he can't chip, there's no way he's going to beat Rory McIlroy, that's for sure.
You know, it's funny that we're talking about Tiger Woods in his short game, when that used to be such a finesse part of his whole career. Just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, his short game, I mean, everybody, you know, talks quite rightly about how great Tiger was around the turn of the century, and he was fantastic. I don't think any of us will ever see golf played better than he played it at that time. But what people forget is, I mean, he wasn't just his full swing. I mean, his short game was magical at that point in his life. I mean, especially his putting. He held everything inside 10 feet, or seemed to hold everything. I mean, you don't win, you know, major championships like he did by 15 shots and 8 shots and all the rest of it. You don't do that at that level with your long game. You do that by holding more putts than everybody else. And that's basically what he did. And that, you know, as we've seen over the last couple of years, is something that isn't really a part of Tiger's game anymore. He misses the short ones that he expected to make before. And that, for me, is the bigger difference. I mean, okay, he's driving has been poor as well, but that's something that is surmountable. I don't think missing putts, no one's ever putted badly and won at the top level, and he's no exception.
No, and you know, there's two parts to wanting Tiger Woods to play the way he played. One is, it's fabulous to watch him play the way he played. And two is, so these young kids that we, you know, tell, well, he was really good, they'll believe us. It's like, come on, you know, really seriously, Tiger Woods was really, really, really good. When he was playing, you knew he was going to win. There was no question that that putt was going to go in. As you said, John, you know, he was unbelievable, unbeatable. He won 30, yeah.
He was in everybody else's head at that point. I mean, Ernie Els was probably the second best player at that time, and Ernie didn't think he could beat Tiger. So, and Tiger knew that Ernie thought he couldn't win, and you know, on and on it goes. It was like the old Jack Nicklaus line, that he knew that he was the best, and everybody else knew he was the best, and he knew that they knew, and all the rest of it. But that's gone. I mean, Tiger doesn't hold any fear for Rory McIlroy. Rory McIlroy doesn't have any scar tissue from losing to Tiger over a long period, like Ernie and Phil did. So it's a whole new ballgame for Tiger, and good luck to the guy. I mean, I think it would be the greatest thing ever if he would come back and play at the level that would even challenge the Rory McIlroys of the world. And it would be fantastic for golf and great for us to watch and great to write about.
Yes.
But he's a long way from that right now. I mean, Rory McIlroy is the number one ranked player in the world for, you know, second time in his career, really. The first time around, he was just the best player. But now, this time, I think he's clearly the best player. There's a difference between that and just being the best. Adam Scott is the number two guy, or Henrik Stenson, but Rory McIlroy is appreciably better than both of those guys, at least in my mind. And that's where Tiger's got to get to. He's got a long way from where Tiger is now to where Rory is, that's for sure.
Yes. Now, you were, as I mentioned, you were just down in Australia. Did you enjoy it?
Well, I go every year for about 3 weeks to a month, and yes, it's a fantastic place to go, especially if you're a golfer. They've got some wonderful golf courses down there and some great tournaments. The Australian Open really should be one of the, you know, the top 6 or 7 events in the world. I mean, it's such a great title, such a great country, and they've produced so many great players over the years, and they've had some great winners, and certainly the last 2 years, Rory won last year at the Lakes, and this year Jordan Spieth, of course, won at the Australian Club in Sydney and played one of the rounds, one of the great rounds I think I've ever seen on the Sunday of the 63 in really, really tough conditions. In fact, Rory acknowledged as much when he said, I think he said something along the lines of, if you give me 100 tries, I couldn't shoot 63 around that golf course on that day. It's a very American golf course, but it's it was playing so tough that day. And Spieth came in afterwards. Very impressive young man, by the way. Came in and acknowledged that he hadn't left one shot on the golf course, and that doesn't happen very often.
No. You always hear somebody say, I could have done that a little bit better, but that's really something. What do you think of Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, the on and off again of their game? They have these 6 months they can't play, and then all of a sudden they're stellar.
Well, Rory's always been like that. Rory's been inconsistent, in inverted commas, his whole career. I mean, he's inconsistent at a very high level, but he's not going to, I don't think he's going to go 12 months without having a little dips here and there. Historically, he's always done that. And Spieth, Spieth's almost too young, and he's not been on tour long enough for us to determine what is the norm for him. I mean, he lacks the weapon, the big weapon that Rory has. Rory separates himself from the competition to a great extent with his driver because he's so long and so straight with it. It's a huge advantage. But Spieth, if you look at Spieth's numbers, it's extraordinary how well he does because he doesn't stand out in any category other than scoring. He's an absolute master of getting the ball in the hole, and how he does it is a bit of a mystery if you look at the statistics.
I love that. Yes, that. So there's nothing that separates him. Like Rory can count on his driver. If his driver's off, though, then his whole game is a little bit off.
That's right. Rory can get by with if he's driving poorly, he could go to the 3-wood or the long iron and still survive. I'm not sure that Spieth could do that. He's long enough, but he's not. If he's driving badly, he's generally speaking not going to do too well. And I actually spoke with him for half an hour on the eve of the Australian Open for a magazine piece that will run in the UK in the next few weeks. And he acknowledged that. I mean, he said that the driving is the thing that he's working on the most, that's the thing that lets him down. When he doesn't play well, it's usually because he hasn't driven it too well. And it's a bit of a struggle. But I tell you what, for a 21-year-old kid, I mean, what an impressive young man he is. He spoke in such a mature way. I think a big part of that, I think, or my initial impression was he has a younger sister who has certain challenges in life, shall we say, and he sees the life that she lives compared with the one that he lives, and that's given him a great perspective, I think, on life, and it's made him quite humble, and he knows that golf isn't everything, and he's devoted to this younger girl, and it's very touching to hear him talk about her. As I say, I was very, very impressed.
That's beautiful. We're talking with John Huggan, golf writer since 1986, all things golf since 1986. We're going to take a quick break, come back and talk about the Ryder Cup. And I'd like to get your take, John, on our Ryder Cup task force. We'll be back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
Make Hawaii Charities the big winner of the Sony Open. Show aloha to your favorite charity at friendsofhawaii.org. And your gift gets a boost from the Aloha for Hawaii Charities Fund. Now through January 18th. Sony Open in Hawaii. Boost and bless local charities at friendsofhawaii.org. Now through January 18th, show aloha for Hawaii Charities. It was our office manager's birthday, and she loves golf. So we decided to get together for golf at Poipu Bay, and we invited a bunch of our customers. It turned into a party. The clubhouse restaurant made a fabulous lunch. The customers had a great time and met the people they give orders to. They were golf buddies long before the 19th hole. Golf at Poipu Bay. Family, friends, business, and fun at Poipu Bay Golf Course on Kauai's South Shore. Spectacular. Call 742-8711 and book your tee time, get together, or event at Poipu Bay. That's 742-8711. Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore Gem.
The all-new 2015 Acura TLX with integrated dynamic system was engineered with four distinct drive modes that adapt to your every mood. Switch from fuel-saving econ to normal mode. Its responsive personality means the TLX is as thrilling as you make it.
Now switch to sport mode. It offers quick response and more agility. It also enhances the natural sound of the engine. And with the world's first 8-speed dual clutch transmission with torque converter, it will respond instinctively to your will with rapid and smooth shifts. And in sport plus mode, the harder you drive, the more dynamic the TLX feels as it taps its full performance potential.
So, come in and test drive the all-new 2015 Acura TLX with Sport Plus mode. It's that kind of thrill.
Be sure to come visit your Hawaii Acura dealers and check out their latest models, cutting-edge features, and amazing deals. Visit your Hawaii Acura dealers today.
Yeah, yeah, a mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that?
Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
We're talking with John Huggin. He's in Scotland. We're in Hawaii. He's a golf writer since 1986, back from Australia. Great interview with Jordan Spieth coming out in a magazine in the UK soon. You'll have to send me a link, John, so I can share it. Because
Yes,
that would be great. I'll follow you on Twitter. If you post it on Twitter, John Huggin at John Huggin. And I didn't know you were the Hugmeister.
Well, yeah, my life changed dramatically when Starsky and Hutch came out years ago, and there was a character called Huggy Bear. And ever since then, I've been Huggy to my friends. I've not very few people actually call me John, to be honest.
I'll get used to calling you Huggy. okay, let's go to the Ryder Cup Task Force that's been put together to fix the U.S. failures. And one of the things I was listening to, you need to listen to this show. This is a really good show. By the Minute. And John Huggy is a co-host. So you guys were talking about the Ryder Cup, and you were saying that we need to win. The U.S. team has to win because U.S. interest in things, flags, wanes, goes away completely if the United States isn't winning. So to keep it a money-making endeavor for who's in charge of it in the U.K.?
It's the European Tour basically take most of the money. In fact, the Ryder Cup actually funds 4 years of life for the European Tour. Every home game, they have to maximize their income because that then pays for the next 4 years of the European Tour.
Wow. So you'd like us to win, or at least come close. But what do you think of this Ryder Cup task force to fix our problems?
Wow, I think you're taking an awfully big stick to a pretty small problem, to be honest. I think what was glaringly obvious from Gleneagles this year was the care and attention that the two captains certainly on the European side. I mean, McGinley was exemplary in how he handled everything from the players to all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And it did seem like, in comparison, that kind of Tom Watson just wandered in at the last minute, took a look around and threw some foursomes partnerships together. And I'm sure that's obviously an exaggeration, but it compared with McGinley, he was outthought and outfought, I mean, right from day one. And I think that kind of conclusion dawned on Tom halfway through the proceedings, because he was unusually unimpressive in the press conferences. He stumbled and didn't seem to have answers for some pretty basic questions. And he was really put on the back foot almost on the first day when he was asked, you know, is it a disadvantage for you guys, the American side, because Tom Watson hadn't been to a Ryder Cup since 1993. Now, he seemed quite taken aback by that question, but I thought it was a very good question, because the Ryder Cup now, compared with 1993, is a whole different animal. And I don't think, and obviously we're looking at it with hindsight, that Tom wasn't prepared. He wasn't ready for what he was faced with in Scotland when he came over. And that really showed. And I think his relationship with the players, a certain number, certainly members of the American team, was a problem as well. And all those things together, and the fact that it does matter so much to the European players. They know that all the money that this thing makes is going to make its way into their pockets eventually, because it goes into the prize funds for the tournament. and add all those things together, and it just seems to mean more to Europe than it does to America.
Yes, it does. It always does. And some people say it's the European chip on the shoulder. I think it's just that they understand, you know, that it's, I don't know, it's like the Olympics for them. They're playing for country and their livelihood. And there's a lot at stake. I think that you guys have the perfect plan in place. And if we would just adopt that, we would be fine. It's like what we do, the PGA of America does. And PGA of America owns the Ryder Cup. And why they haven't figured this out, I don't understand. They elect a secretary, right? PGA of America. And that person becomes each, and then eventually they're the president. Now,
yeah.
You in the UK, in the European countries, you know what I mean, you have the assistant captain moves his way up the ladder to become captain, so he gets years of training. It just makes sense.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, McGinley had, you know, he'd been, I think, been vice captain twice in past Ryder Cup, so he'd obviously gained experience. He'd seen what worked and seen what didn't work, which is probably more important. And he's the model for captains going forward, because he just seemed to get absolutely everything right. He had a nice mix of his assistant captains as well. There was, you know, Miguel Angel Jimenez, whose role seemed to be to go onto the first tee with his cigar and wave to the crowd. But that was what he was doing. He had Sam Torrance, who was, you know, a past captain and a Scot. He was there to handle the, you know, the Scottish side of things. He had Jose Maria Latabal, who was behind the scenes looking after the Spanish contingent. And, you know, he just got everything right. And it was, as I say, the contrast between that and the American side of things, which was obviously exposed, you know, only too clearly at the press conference at the end when Phil Mickelson said what he said. I mean, that was, my goodness, that was the most uncomfortable 10, 15 minutes I think I've ever had in a press conference. Yeah. It was something to hear and see. And I kept my eyes actually more on Tom Watson than I did on Phil as Phil was speaking. And Tom Watson, his eyes just kind of hardened and his expression never changed once through the whole thing. But you could tell that this was torture for him.
John Huggan, golf writer since 1986 and now co-host of By the Minute. You got to get it. Okay, you got it. It's a podcast. And then you can subscribe. I'm going to. thanks so much for being on the show.
It's free, Danielle. You don't have to subscribe.
Well, you click on it and say you want your system to come. You want it to come to you, and that's like an RSS subscription, which means like it's a free subscription. Yes, indeed. By the minute, you don't pay for it. It's free. Yes, John Huggan. Thanks so much for being on the show.
It's my pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you, and I'll call on you because I always laugh with you. Aloha.
Anytime.
All right, we're going to thank the people who make this show possible. Makes it possible for me to laugh with Huggy. Alert Alarm of Hawaii, providing CCTV surveillance systems for both commercial and residential customers across Hawaii. These systems can be monitored anywhere in the world, in Scotland or on the Big Island, wherever you are from your laptop or your smartphone. Alert Alarm of Hawaii, your Kama'aina video surveillance company. Creative Plumbing. I can't do it as good as he does. Whether you're a building, a shopping center, a store, a custom home, a townhouse, call Creative Plumbing, because it's got to be done right. Creative Plumbing. Poipu Bay Golf Course, 18 championship holes, hosted the PGA of America Grand Slam of Golf for over 10 years, and they've got some awesome deals that you need to get over. If you're looking for gifts, go over to Poipu Bay on Kauai, 40% off. Ahead, Link Soul, Ashworth, Adidas, they've got a table there, and 25% off the sale rack. And if you'd like to play a round of golf, there's a 1040, an 1150, and a 920. Acura of Honolulu, where military appreciation never ends. Ask TJ about the military appreciation pricing and discounts at 777 Ala Moana Boulevard. It's a great day to test drive an Acura. Star Protection for property threat and risk assessment. That's right. You get them on your property, in your home. They'll show you where you're vulnerable, and then they put the protection in place for you and your family, for your business. Get the Star Team on your property. Thank you for your mana. May you hit the sweet spot every time. I'm Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on The Golf Club.
Copyright 2014.